Couple of announcements here, just to remind you that given what we have seen and all of that, we don't see any reason not to resume our full complement of classes in October, since no one has had a contact or any experience at all with any of this. I believe the last time I checked, the positivity rate, whatever that means, by the way, was down to around 4%, which is very low, and kind of consistent with other viruses, frankly. So we'll be the first week in October, which Sunday is the 4th, so the 6th and the 7th, we will have classes on those days, and then every Tuesday and Wednesday thereafter. Secondly, we were kind of reviewing our security issues policy. We haven't had any trouble and don't fully expect any, but just to remind you of a few things, we have three guys who have volunteered to take care of opening and closing, and they alternate every third month, so there won't always be the same person opening. But if you get here prior to somebody having opened up the door, you might want to either wait in your car or just observe, be careful. If you get out, you're kind of on your own. But again, we haven't had any problem. I think there was one time, sometime, some guy was staying on the property or something that wasn't supposed to be. But as a normal rule, we can see all around the building now. They did clear out all this back here. So there's nobody going to be sneaking out there hiding, I don't think. So, but at any rate, the person that opens is responsible for checking. So if you get here a little early, just, you know, cool your heels a second, I guess, until they get here. Or just, you know, if it's broad daylight, like Sunday morning, it's usually not a problem, but I hope they get this thing passed and we don't have to change time again. But good thing is, next week, thank God, fall begins and it's really going to cool off. Oh, wait a minute. We live in Florida, don't we? I'm sorry. I was confused. Also, the person in charge who opens and closes, by the way, they have to, after they lock up, if you should decide to hang around, you want to talk to somebody, and that's fine. That's your business. We're not here to monitor any of that. But they'll notify you if they're leaving, and then just be aware that there's nobody, you know, keeping an eye on you. So if you decide to hang around and talk and all that, that's fine, too. If you want a fellowship with some believer, but just know that they're not required to hang around forever to watch one or two people who want to talk. So they can leave after they've, you know, but just they'll notify you, hey, I'm leaving, I'm locked up, I'm leaving, you're on your own kind of thing. All right, let's, for those of you who did pray, by the way, another thing, a couple of things actually. Number one, thanks for all the prayers with regard to Mary. It looks like God worked all that out. Got a good vehicle, apparently, and so that was really blessed. We're really happy about that. So appreciate your prayers in that regard. And of course, I encourage you from time to time, just remember those who cannot be at Bible class, not who will not, but cannot because of other reasons. That they don't have, they can't get to face-to-face teaching. We pray for those people who listen online because they can't get sound doctrine any other way. So encourage you to remember them and fire up prayers for them. From time to time, I hear from one of them, and they seem to be really appreciative of the fact that we have a local church and teaching available to them. So, but that's the way it's supposed to go, I guess. All right, let's make sure you are in fellowship here, and let's continue on dealing with this rather shocking comment that greedy people are idolaters. If you told some person in a Babylon, modern-day America, you're an idol worshiper, they'd probably be shocked, particularly if they are a believer. But if their life is characterized by this greed, this desire for more, this desire to have and keep and store up. Again, hoarding probably is a part, a manifestation of a greed problem, frankly. But maybe manifestations of other problems too, but I don't know about that. Well, we were down here, we've defined what it is to mean greedy. And that's it's basically self-serving. It is living under the sin nature, pursuing generally money and details and things of that life for their own benefit. And then wanting to keep it all, failure to share, not being generous. These are things that are decried at other places in the scripture as well. and an idolater. But in Babylon, we don't worship false idols, i.e. we don't have manufacturers making little gold and silver and wooden trinkets that people worship. I mean, you may have a plastic Jesus on your dashboard, but hopefully you don't worship him. And if you do, maybe you shouldn't. I don't know. I'm not sure what the value of a plastic Jesus is. But as long as it doesn't rain or freeze, I guess we'll be all right. But people don't do this as much today. They bow down to other things. They bow down to fame. They worship celebrities. Oh, they're great. They can't do anything wrong. They worship power. They worship political power particularly. That's why you've seen these crises and these scandals over the years. Because people are attracted to powerful people that can do things for them. Or they're just attracted to the power itself. Some people are impressed by that. This guy can get things done. Well, that's all fine and good if you're doing it under God's will. That's the part we would sort of want to insist on. So again, we worship all kinds of things. I have always enjoyed sports, but the longer I live, the less I enjoy them, frankly. But there are people whose whole lives are built around sports, and they'll make any sacrifice necessary. Again, we've talked about certain jobs are not conducive to a positive believer's lifestyle. Anything that really takes you out of Bible class consistently. Lots of jobs would do that. I mean, if you're a professional football player, if you're a referee, you have to be wherever they're playing the games. So lots of jobs. If a job requires excessive travel, that's obviously something that's not conducive to the life of a positive growing believer who needs to be in Bible class. So we have to watch out for those types of things and not place these things first. Again, what it boils down to is putting something first other than God. How can we tell? Well, because we have something we call priorities. And you have to be able to prioritize. And that means you have to have one is most important, two is second most, three is third most. And if one isn't Bible class, whatever you're doing, you're wrong. If that isn't your first priority, is to come and get your spiritual food and grow up. Under the system that God has provided, you're wrong. It's your job, your family. These all have to come subservient to these other priorities. And these probably should be reversed. Your family probably should come before your job. But the reality is people are skewed in their priorities. They don't have this as their first and only. They mix it in with, okay, most of the time this is my priority. Well, most of the time you might get rewarded. The rest of the time, probably not, if that's not your priority. And this gets in, again, to mindsets, to dealing with things that we have to deal with. All right, well, and we're down here, so we're ready to pick up here and move on with 34. In the Jewish and biblical traditions, one can hardly find a charge with more serious consequences than that of being an idol worshiper. Psalm 97, 7. This was considered the most serious thing just about you could charge anyone with. And in the honor-shame culture, this was always viewed as a shameful thing. This was never viewed as honorable at any level. So let those be ashamed who serve graven images. But again, most Babylonians think they don't. But they worship their job, their car, their house, their marriages, their this, their that, their money, their details, their retirement accounts, celebrity, fame, all the stuff that people can get off on. And really, if there's one right path to God's plan, we refer to it foolishly as the straight and narrow. If there's one right plan, well, there are 8,000 deviations. The deviations can become endless to get off of that straight and narrow path. And so these decisions that people make, what is your life? Your life right now, who you are, where you are, everything is, I can lie it all down to a series of decisions that you have made. You say, well, God had a plan and I was led. That's all true. I'm assuming you're a positive believer. That's true too. But it didn't come apart from your volition. You've made choices. Hard choices, sometimes you've skipped the hard choices. Well, we have to make the hard ones. Let those be ashamed who serve graven images, who boast themselves of idols. Worship him, all you gods. And why? Because some people boast themselves in their money. They're worried more about their retirement account than they are about applying doctrine right now. Which should have the priority? And I think it's pretty straightforward. That, to me, if you're not applying in the here and now, I don't care how much money you got saved. And not that God couldn't wipe all that out quickly anyway, if he chooses to. Also, Jeremiah 25. So people, again, unfortunately are impressed in many cases in our culture with all the wrong things. I seriously wonder how many Babylonians have survived it without the movie theaters. Because there are some people whose whole lives are just revolved around... If you go look at the amount of money just spent on movie tickets in this country, not so much anymore, obviously, can't assemble. But before all this, we're talking billions and billions of dollars. I mean, when you start talking about the foolish way people spend their money, we spend billions and billions just on our pets. Now, are we against pets? No. You can have a pet. But if your pet's costing you more than your offering is, there's something going on there. Something's skewed. I spend $1,000 on my pet, but I give $100 to the church. There's something wrong with that. Something very wrong with that, in my opinion. Not that it's wrong to have a pet, but my. That's tragic to my thinking. And again, we're not against animals or pets or any of that. Enjoy your pets if you have them. I don't want one. I got enough to do to take care of me. So do not go after other gods to serve them and to worship them. And do not provoke me to anger with the work of your hands. And I will do you no harm. Yet you have not listened to me, declares the Lord, in order that you might provoke me to anger with the work of your hands to do your own harm. And the works of their hands are their little idols they made. Their little things are the things they worship. A Molech, idols of Molech, God, and later on Diana, Artemis, all that. So the practice of idolatry was considered to be something that characterized negative unbelievers and distinguished them from God's people. The pagans were often distinguished by this fact that idolatry was frequent among them. Exodus 23, verses 24 and 32 and 33. You shall not worship not just gods, not just foreign gods, their gods. These people are identified with this, nor serve them, nor do according to their deeds. But you shall utterly overthrow them and break their sacred pillars in pieces. These were part of their idolatrous worship. You shall make no covenant with them. Why the doctrine of separation? Because these people are involved in all kinds of things that do nothing for the positive believer, but drag him down. And people think they get away with this. They think they get involved with the negative and it's not going to hurt them. I can list you right now 50 people I know that have gotten involved with negative people over the course of their Christian lives and are no longer in class. And that's just from my limited perspective. Think how many times it's happened on a worldwide basis over the centuries of the church age. That people get involved with the negative and they justify it. And they begin to rationalize it. And they say, well, this relationship's okay for me, even though they're negative. No, it's not. If they're not positive to the truth, you don't want them. You're better off being alone. It's better to live in a corner of a roof than it is with the wrong person. You know, and if you want to check out the corner of your roof, I'll bet it's about 140 up there right now or so. And it's better to live there than with the wrong person. So you will make no covenant with them. You separate from these people involved in this stuff. We don't give them aid and comfort. We don't encourage them. Oh, you go to a church. That's great. What church do you go to? What do you study? Well, we don't study. And so quickly we've watched how positive, quote, positive believers are more worried about their health than they are about fulfilling God's plan. That's another form of idol worship. You worship yourself. That I'm more worried about me than I am about fulfilling God's plan. You can't be that way. If you're going to succeed at this, that won't work. You shall not live in their land, because they will make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare to you. And so the negative aren't going to come up to you and say, hey, I'm negative. My job is to get you out of Bible class. They're never going to announce that. They're never going to say, hey, I hate God and his plan, but I want to be friends with you. Most normal believers would run the opposite direction if they were approached that way. But that's not the way the demons do it. and powerful spiritual forces use negative people to accomplish their will. And we have to be on the alert for this. And why? And not become at the very last minute. Here we are, we've run this Christian life, some of us 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And then cash it in right at the finish line. I've been watching, I don't know, probably most of you don't like it, but I've been watching, I like to watch the Tour de France. And you watch people, and I've seen it before in other disciplines too, like triathlons and that sort of thing. And you watch people when they hit the wall and they crack. And I've literally watched people crack hundreds of yards from the finish line. And the rest of them just swept by them. Because they didn't make it. And I've watched people's bodies break down. I mean, physically, we're talking about during these physical demonstrations. But the same thing happens spiritually. You run the race a long time, guess what? Why are we exhorted not to grow weary in well-doing? Because it's easy to do. It's real easy to do. It's real easy to say, I'm tired, I've had enough. I've applied enough. No, you haven't. None of us have. And then, yeah, try that on Jesus. Oh, Jesus, I've applied like Jesus had. Really? Really? Have you shed any blood yet and you're striving against the sin nature? And I don't mean by accident. That's what the author of Hebrews is getting at. Well, 35, the Old Testament condemned this practice in the strongest of terms. This activity resulted in some of the strongest polemic. If you're not familiar with that term, I'd try to, if I use one, put it in there. Aggressive attacks, verbal attacks, or refutation of a point of view from God's spokesman, who often ridiculed idols as being powerless and deceptive. 1 Kings 18:27, there should be a semicolon in there and a space. 1 Kings 18:27. Somehow missed that one. And I love this. Sometimes as a communicator, it can be fun. And when you see enough stupidity, every once in a while, God lets us make fun of it. You say, well, that's mean. No, God makes fun of it too. We're just joining in with Him. He gets enough of it sometimes. And really, sometimes if you didn't make fun of it, you'd be crying at how stupid these people are. How disoriented and maladjusted they actually are. And so here they get in. This is in the context of the prophets of Baal. Now, Elijah's just gone through what I still like to call the Elijah syndrome, named after him. And that is, I'm the only one who's really doing it right. I alone am left. And God says, well, that's not true. And so, verse 22, he tells them, I am alone left of the prophet of the Lord. But Baal's prophets are 450 men. So let's see who's the real God here. Let's have a showdown. I love these kinds of, these are some of my favorite passages. Like Moses calling him out. Come out here a second. You want to talk? Or God when he showed up there in the whirlwind to Job. Hello? You got something to say? And so he calls these people out. He said, verse 24, you call on the name of your God and I'll call on the name of the Lord. And the God who answers by fire, he is God. And all the people said, that's a good idea. And the people are idiots. But that doesn't change anything. So Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, choose an ox, fix it all the way you want, call on your God, but put no fire under it. And they took the ox, which was given them, they prepared it, they called on the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, O Baal, answer us. But there was no voice and no one answered. And they leaped about the altar which they had made. Well, maybe he needs a show. I don't know. How are we going to get his attention? And it came about at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, call out with a loud voice. Maybe you're not talking loud enough. I mean, this God might be hard of hearing, or he's a ways off. Maybe he's not near shot. For he is a God. Either he is occupied or has gone aside. Occupied means to be in the bathroom. Maybe he's indisposed. Just call on him. Maybe he'll come out of the bathroom for you. Well, do gods have to use the bathroom? And this doesn't fit against anything anybody would have considered as a god. So Elijah's just thoroughly ridiculing them. Maybe he's gone aside or is on a journey. Or perhaps he's asleep and needs to be woke up. Maybe your God's just tired. He might have needed a nap. He could have had a hard morning. We don't know. And so they cried with a loud voice and cut themselves according to their custom with sword and lances until the blood gushed out of them. This is a part of the pagan deal. This is why I am so opposed to any sort of tattoos, piercings, any of this stuff. This is all pagan, paganism. That's all it is. And it's indicative of these people. And so they're still engaging in their deals, of course, to get their God to answer. And Elijah said, come near to me. So they finally repaired it. Well, actually, he calls and then God answers, as we know. So, but here the whole ridiculing of how ridiculous these people are. And so to accuse a believer in a local church, and this is what Paul's talking about, back to our context. Telling believers in local churches that if you are greedy, you are an idolater. This is, you're equal to the prophets of Baal. You're no better than they are in that sense. Psalm 115. So unbelievers, they say, well, I'm not that bad. Yeah, you are. You just may not admit it. Your conscience may try to rationalize it. You may scar it over, but yes, you are. That's kind of our point here. If greed is idolatry, if they are equal, then there's a direct correlation here. Verses 4 through 8. Their idols are silver and gold, the work of man's hands. Right there, that's an indictment right there, a very serious indictment. That how's it a God if I can make it? I mean, a God is transcendent, right? How do you make a God? Well, that's ludicrous. They have mouths but cannot speak. They have eyes that cannot see. They have ears that cannot hear. They have noses that cannot smell. They have hands but cannot feel, feet and cannot walk. They cannot make a sound with their throat. Those who make them will become like them. Everyone who trusts in them. And here's the problem. People become like their priorities. Whatever your priorities are is what you're going to become. And you will become like what you worship. And the greedy person worships money, whether they admit it or not. Money in the details. That's what they worship. And it takes many, many forms. But that's what they worship. Psalm 135 also, 15 through 18. The idols of the nations are but silver and gold. And again, we don't worship silver and gold now. We worship celebrity, fame, status, power, money, sex, all these other things. The good life. What do you think they're selling with that Corona commercial? See the feet out on the beach and the bottle of beer and the good life. It's Miller time. It's happy hour. And you meet most of the unhappiest people in the world at happy hour. Strangely enough, maybe we should call it unhappy hour. It'd be closer. And the same thing, have mouths, don't speak. All of this is very similar to what we saw there in the early ones. Isaiah 44 also. These indictments are sprinkled throughout the Old Testament. They're not unique. There's a lot of them. Those who fashion a graven image, all of them are futile. Every one of them. Not just some of them. And their precious things are of no profit. Even their own witnesses fail to see or know. So that they will be put to shame. Who has fashioned a god or cast an idol to a prophet? And when we talk about the honor-shame culture, that's more indicative in some ways of the Middle Eastern cultures and the Eastern cultures than it is of Western culture. The problem is in the Western culture, we don't know how to blush. We don't know what shame is any longer. People are doing all manner of things they ought to be ashamed of, and they're just not. And they engage in these shameful behaviors, and yet they're lauded as heroes. They're paraded before us as people to admire. And now, pass. Who has fashioned a god or cast an idol to no profit? Behold, all his companions will be put to shame, for the craftsmen themselves are mere men. If you're going to make a god, first thing, you can't be a man. If you're going to make a god, and you're not, it can't happen. But you can't be a human and do it. How do you make a god? Show me. And I mean, I'm not just talking about carving some little thing out. I'm saying, where's the god behind it that it's supposed to represent? It's just an image. The man shapes iron into a cutting tool. And he does his work over the coals, fashioning it with hammers and working it with his strong arm. He also gets hungry and his strength fails. He drinks no water and becomes weary. And another shapes wood. He extends a measuring line. He outlines it with red chalk. I think we use blue nowadays mostly. He works it with planes and outlines with a compass and makes it in the form of a man like the beauty of man so he may sit it in a house. Surely he cuts cedars for himself. He takes a cypress or an oak and raises it up. He plants a fir. And then it becomes something for a man to burn. So he takes one of them and warms himself. Now here's some real sarcasm. Pay attention here. This is sarcasm of the highest order. He also takes a fire to make bread. He also makes a god and worships it. He makes a graven image and falls down over it. Half of it he burns in the fire. Over his half he eats meat and he roasts a roast and is satisfied. But the rest of it, he makes into a god. Well, doesn't that seem incongruous? How can half of your tree be a god and half of it cook your food? What if you got the wrong half? What if you cooked it with the god? Well, that's insane. It's crazy. And he falls down. He makes it into a god, a graven image, and he falls down before it and worships. And he says, "Deliver me, for you are my God." This sounds like the person that trusts in their money, doesn't it? Deliver me. You're going to be my deliverance. My money is. Not my character, not my righteousness. My money is going to deliver me. How do I know I'm safe? I got money in the bank. Does that really make you safe? And the answer, of course, is no. They do not know, they do not understand, for he has smeared over their eyes so they cannot see, and their hearts so they cannot comprehend. So nobody remembers all this and says, "Hey, I burned half of it. The rest I make it into an abomination." Abomination is a very strong term. I mean, it's that which is detested and loathed to the maximum. And God detests these behaviors. And you can also see Habakkuk 2, 18 and 19. So Job recognized that devotion to anything, one's own pride, his money, his details, was an affront to the exclusivity that God demands. In that regard, money can certainly become an idol. Job chapter 31. And God, why do you think he uses this analogy in the Old Testament? "I, the Lord, am a jealous God." Now, jealousy is generally viewed as a negative characteristic, something to be avoided. But he says, "I am a jealous God." Why? Because he demands us. He demands all of us, not just part of us when we feel like it. He demands all of us. That's the part of the... See, when you claim to be a believer, "I'm saved, I've been redeemed," what does that mean? It means God owns you. You've been bought with a price. And this is one of the reasons I didn't want to get saved, because I knew what this meant. I knew he was claiming my whole life. Many believers apparently haven't figured this out yet, something I figured out as an unbeliever. The redemption means he owns you. By the way, he owns you by virtue of creation anyway. So the Creator owns does he not have the right to do over the lump of clay what he sees fit? So he owns us by virtue of creation. We are his. But we are his by redemption now. He has bought us. He has paid the price. Therefore, he has the full right to demand anything and everything from us he chooses. And God obviously wants what's best for us. This is where the relationship is not like a master and a slave. Paul said in Romans, he said, "I'm using this analogy because of the weakness of your flesh." But God's not really a harsh, demanding master. And we're not simply slaves. But he has these rights and he has these privileges. So here, Job 31, 24. And so he has the right to exclusivity. If we won't give it to him, that's on us. And that will be addressed at some point by God, believe me. God is not going to be ignored by people. They may think they're getting away with ignoring him. "Well, I've ignored God for years. Nothing's happened." Okay, then one of two things is true. Either you're not positive and it doesn't make any difference. Or number two, it hasn't happened yet. One or the other. It hasn't happened yet. You might just add that term "yet" to it. So if I have put my confidence in gold, and if I've called fine gold my trust, if I've gloated because my wealth is great and because my hand had secured so much, if I have looked at the sun when it shone, or the moon in its splendor, and my heart became secretly enticed, and my hand threw a kiss from my mouth, that too would have been an iniquity calling for judgment. For I would have denied God above. And Job puts loving money, confidence in gold, in the same deal that he puts idolatry. Just like Paul does. So this is not, when we say Paul's words may have been shocking to a New Testament audience, they may have been, but they were not without precedent. And Paul, as you know, you had to know he was a great student of the Old Testament. He probably had the whole thing memorized, who knows? Wouldn't shock me. Knowing he was a Pharisee of Pharisees, and they were really good at overtly dotting the I's and crossing the T's. So Matthew indicates that property, money, and possessions can certainly become rivals for the affection that God demands. And yet people engage in all this and still claim to love God. This is a part of that 1984 doublespeak. They hold two contradictory opinions at the same time. Both can't be true. They hold this idea God demands 100% from me and he has the right to it until my money says elsewhere. Then my money demands 100%, or my details. And so here, since God demands, since the acquisition and maintenance of one's details requires one's time, service, obedience, and love to those things. And people don't want to acknowledge this. Most people in America are idolaters because many, many, many people are greedy. And you think, well, this is indicative of the rich. Oh, no, there are poor, greedy people. Don't presume because they're rich, they're greedy. There might be rich people that aren't greedy at all. And there may be horribly poor people that are very greedy. They just can't get it. That doesn't make them less greedy just because they can't get it. They still want it is the issue. Matthew 6, 19 through 24. 6, there you go. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. And again, this is the negative may with the present imperative. It may have the force of stop doing it. It can have that force. I'm just saying you got to be careful and assume it always does. But it can have that force, stop doing this. But certainly it envisions going forward that you don't do it anymore. At the bare minimum, it envisions that. Where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. They are all of your details and money are subject to, first, just the natural decay of life under the principles of thermodynamics. Things are going to decay. You live in a world filled with death, and things decay. And where thieves break in and steal, the criminal out there, the criminal element. Why do we have to have alarms on our houses? We don't want the criminals in them. Why do people have guns? To keep the criminals out. That's at least one of the reasons. I'm not saying it's the only reason they have guns, but that's one, is to protect themselves. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Now, how do we do that? How exactly do we do that? Where neither moss nor rust destroys, they're not subject to the degrading of time and all of that, but where thieves do not break in and steal. Well, that's good. Anything I lay up in heaven. And how can I know what I'm laying up? Well, every aspect, every point of divine good production that you do, every application, however big or small, from giving somebody a drink of cold water who's thirsty to laying your life down for them, that would be the extreme. Everything in there, if you do it in fellowship, is rewardable. And that's a broad spectrum of things, from the very least little insignificant type thing to the greatest. And so when you give, you say, well, I don't give very much, I don't have very much. That doesn't matter. What God's looking for is, are you faithful? That's what he's looking for. He says, look, where your treasure is, and this is right where you can see it. Where your treasure is. If your treasure consists of money and details and things and homes and cars and lands and timeshares and all of this stuff. Again, are any of those things fine in their place? Sure. We're not against those things. What we're against is the inordinate devotion to them. And there are believers like this that are inordinately devoted, worried more about money and details than they really are about anything else. Although they will camouflage it with excuses and say, well, no, that's not really my motivation. I'm really worried about other people. That's why I'm not doing it. Are you really? Well, time will tell. The lamp of the eye is the body. If your eye is clear, then your whole body will be full of light. What the hell does this mean? Well, he's talking about if your eye is clouded by greed and avarice, you're not going to see things clearly. This is one of the things I can tell you. I know some believers who clearly can't see things clearly. because they don't want to. They're blinded by this stuff. Their eye is cloudy. They pursue these things. And if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. And if then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Well, it's extensive. That's his whole point. It comes to control the person. No one can serve two masters. For he either hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. And he didn't say, note what he didn't say. He didn't say it's hard to serve God and wealth. You might be able to occasionally. He said you cannot do it. And my suspicion is, I haven't looked at it, but I'll bet it's negative. Dunamai with the negative. You cannot serve. It is not possible. Dunamai means to be capable or able to do something. You're not able to do this, whether people think they can. See, some people think they're pulling it off. I serve God and money. No, you don't. You're delusional. But you can't serve God and money. But many believers try this. Well, Matthew indicates all this. Well, 38, there is significant evidence in Josephus that the Jews also expressed bitter opposition to idolatry during the first century AD. I cited the verses. You can look them up. This is all antiquities and all that should be available online if you want to check it out. So thus, both Jews and Christians would be alarmed and perhaps horrified by any suggestion or charge of engaging in idolatry, since both believed that God alone was to be the object of worship. For Jews and Christians, greed and idolatry had a number of things in common, and both made them candidates for comparison. Both were associated with gold and silver, which were found in pagan temples, which often served as the ancient banks in the world. So you say, well, I have to go down to the house of Artemis because I got my money there. Do you? Maybe it's not the best place to put it. Perhaps. Acts 17:29. Being then the children of God. And Paul's talking here only in the context of creation. That all mankind are his children in the sense that they are created by him. We ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone. Or an image formed by the art and thought of man. Again, if a man can make it, it's not a god. Whatever it is, it's not a god. And since there's really only one god, then obviously they'd never make that. 1 Timothy also, 6:10. So, idolatry again. These had a lot in common. For the love of money, and this is actually correctly translated. If you find yourself thinking or hearing, money is the root of all evil. That's, first, it's badly wrong, mistranslated. Money is not the root of all evil. The love of money is a root of every sort of evil, of all kinds of evils. And the love of money can be manifested in a bunch of ways. There's a bunch of things. People can prostitute themselves, I mean both literally and figuratively, for money. People can kill for money. People can steal for money. People can do all manner of things, but you say, well, what's their motivation? Money was their motivation. And so it can take a lot of different forms. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. And some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith. They're no longer faithful to the apostolic teaching that we espouse. They've decided they know better which imperatives they should have to apply and not apply. The pick and choose form of Christianity, like it's a buffet. Oh, I don't like vegetables. I don't want meat. I don't want bread. It's not a buffet. It's not pick and choose as you see fit. This is a whole. It's a unified form. So, and guess what? They wandered away from the faith, and I wonder if wandered is strong enough there. Is it apotathemi again? Oh, actually, it's apoplanao. They've wandered into error. Planao means to be wrong, to be wandering out generally in error. So both were believed to lead to or contribute to other forms of evil. That's the verse we just looked at. The love of money is a root of all sorts. Both were considered to be dangerous vices from which people should flee. Well, Christians particularly. not. But again, people in general should get away from this. It's this love of money that wrecks a bunch of people. That's not the only sin that'll do it, but it is one, and it's a big one. And particularly where we live in history, where this is tolerated, encouraged, and applauded. The people are successful. Every year we get at the list of the richest. Why do we care? What does it matter? Because we worship money. We worship people that have it. Not we, hopefully, but people do. Therefore, my beloved, as he says, flee from idolatry. Run away from the worship of anything that isn't God, whatever that may entail. And 2 Timothy 6:11. That might be hard to find. I think it might be 1 Timothy. Yeah, that should be 1 Timothy. There is no chapter 6 in case you can't find it. That's good. I don't find it. And actually, I got an extra number in there. I don't even think that's... Okay, well, anyway. 11. 1 Timothy 6:11. But flee these things, you man of God. And what things is in context? The love of money. The things like this. Run away from this, just like you would run away from idol worship. And yet, in America, Babylonians run towards it. And they wonder why God's not really for our country. And people wonder, I mean, even if they won't articulate, and you won't hear it on the news, because they'll only talk about Mother Nature. Mother Nature's not for us. No, God controls the weather. And even if he's not controlling it, he's overseeing it. But he generally controls it for his own purposes. He throws the thunderbolt where he likes. That must be nice. I wish I had that power. Call down the thunder from on high. Well, lightning, I guess. That's a lightning bolt. Well, both were disparaged as being pointless, since neither can deliver a person in the end. When it comes down time to die, you're not going to think about your bank account, trust me. I've come close to death on a couple of occasions. And you know what? I wasn't thinking about my money. Never crossed my mind once. And when people, you can talk a big fight, but when people come down, you come face to face with death, let me warn you, it's not called the valley of the shadow of death for nothing. It's scary. And you better be prepared for it with doctrine. Now, you can be prepared for it. But for people who aren't, no, it's going to be frightening, in fact. Psalm 31, 6. I hate those who regard vain idols. They're empty. They're pointless. There's nothing behind them. And the same thing's true with the love of money. There's nothing behind this acquisition mentality that Babylon has embraced to the maximum. There's nothing satisfying about this. But I trust in the Lord. And Ezekiel 7:17. So, scattered throughout, again, the Old Testament here. That doesn't look right, but let me see here. Well, that one doesn't appear to be it. Well, I'll have to find out what that one is. Is it 19? Uh-huh. I just should have went one further. Oh, yeah, that's good. 19, probably 19. That makes more sense. They will fling their silver into the streets. This is going to be funny. You say, well, that's why? Because they know it's useless now. And at some point, and by the way, as believers, and even just living in America, even if you're not a believer, just living in America, if you don't know that they manipulate the currency here in really weird ways, you don't know much of anything. That they can control inflation and use it as a weapon. And in fact, that's what they intend to do. And for those of us who've lived through the late 70s with Jimmy Carter, just a peanut farmer from Georgia, and saw the 18% car loan rates in 20, and saw the explosion of inflation like nobody's business. And then they can drive. And currencies are easy to manipulate. Let's face it, because there's no foundation for currency anymore. We were taken off the gold standard, so your money is worth exactly. Here's what they tell you. This is worth a dollar. And we're going to print 100 on the exact same paper using the exact same ink, and we're going to say this is worth 100. They're the exact same size, just a little different image on it. This is 100, this is a 1. You know what they're worth? They're worth whatever the market will bear. They're not worth what they tell you they're worth. This is the problem with manipulation of currency. It's too easy to do it. And that's why getting off the gold standard was the doom for this country, or at least part of it. And then we got a central bank. And how many times did our founding fathers warn us against this? The bankers will destroy your country. And we've watched them do it. We've watched them destroy stuff. We've watched the Wolf of Wall Street and seen what they've done. We've watched Too Big to Fail. If you haven't seen some of these, Wolf of Wall Street's a movie. Too Big to Fail is more of a documentary. And how many tax dollars have gone now to bail out banks? Well, because money's so important for people, sadly. They will fling their silver into the streets and their gold will become an abhorrent thing. Their silver and their gold will not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. They cannot satisfy their appetite, nor can they fill their stomachs, for their iniquity has become an occasion of stumbling. So in the second century, the early fathers noted that the absence of idolatry was one of the chief factors that characterized Christians. On the other hand, idolatry was considered to be one of the hallmarks of pagan unbelievers. And that's what we're going to see. Don't become partakers with them. They're in trouble. So thus, Paul unites the concept of greedy, materialistic lust with the most severe of crimes against the Creator, since the love of money competes with and very often supersedes the love for God. And the materialist is devoted to acquiring and keeping money in the details of life. The acquisition and storage of money in the details become the priority, rather than the intake and application of Bible doctrine. And so these are things that are evident in the life of believers. I mean, they're either here or they're not. They're either applying or they're not. They're either consistent and faithful or they're not. Now these things you can see. You don't have to guess. These are visible lifestyle choices people make. And so how can we judge? One of the quick ways, and just the quickest and easiest way to judge anything, is how much time you spend on it. Time is the coin of our realm, people. We got 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we all got the same 48 hours a week or whatever it is. 168. Yeah. No, I couldn't do it in my head quickly. 168. We all got the same amount of time. And how do we spend it? And what are we doing with it? Obviously, some of our time has to be spent making a living, feeding ourselves, all this. And you can go see a breakdown. Somebody's done it all. You'll spend, X amount of years in bed. You'll spend X amount of years eating. You'll spend X amount of time doing this. How many people at the end of all are going to say, but I spent X amount of years serving God? That's not on their list, generally speaking, of things that will happen. So the greedy person often becomes devoted to his money and possessions, organizing the priorities of his life around pursuing money in the details and not around pursuing the royal imperatives. And we're told to run away from these things and run towards these other things. See, that's one of the problems that people don't get, I don't think, that anytime you're told to flee something, you're headed in another direction. Where should you flee to, we might ask. So one of the problems that believers face, particularly those living in Babylon in the last days, is that this vice is often tolerated, encouraged, and even treated as though it were some sort of a positive virtue. And I have personally heard some believers praise others because they're so shrewd with regard to making and keeping wealth. You're not going to ever hear me do that. I'm not impressed with that in the first place. Because number one, I know what the priorities are, and that isn't it. But I've heard other believers, oh, this believer's really shrewd. They can handle money. Oh, that's good. Can they handle it under God, though? Just because you're shrewd with money doesn't mean that you're godly. There's a huge difference there, obviously. So, however, the reality is that greedy people and the lifestyle that is based on continued acquisition should be condemned in the strongest of terms, as Paul does here. And Paul condemns this. There's no question. I mean, whatever debates interpreters have about exactly what all he's saying here, there is no question that it is highly inflammatory, one, and that it is a condemnation in the worst terms. That this is not some, okay, well, you might have a problem here. This is very, very dangerous. So the believer that chooses this path is certainly short-sighted. Why? How can I tell if a believer is short-sighted? Because they got about 70 years here, roughly. And if that's where their focus is, rather than the endless ages of eternity, that is short-sighted. If you know that you're going to have to live somewhere forever, why would you spend a whole bunch of time here preparing a temporal place that's going to be destroyed and that you'll lose? And we all have to have a house, don't get me wrong. We're not against houses or vacations or any of this stuff. Or even money in the details. I think everybody here has a TV set. If you have 8 of them, okay, problem. You don't need 8 TVs. But so what? Everybody's got to have this stuff. But if you're focused on this temporal deal that's going to pass by quickly, ask some of us how fast it goes by. It's like that. You look around, you think, man, I remember when I was playing baseball all summer. I thought summer seemed endless. 3 months out of school. What happened to those 3-month vacations again? Life sets in. So he's short-sighted because he focuses more on acquisition and possession than he does on the temporal. And more importantly, the eternal benefits of liberal generosity towards others. And our time is gone. We're going to have to stop there. We'll go ahead and quit there today. And go ahead and pick up here on Wednesday as we continue. This is important stuff. That's why I'm not rushing through it, because in many churches, this is just glossed over. It's just not addressed because it's uncomfortable. And one of the things I learned as a Baptist, very early on, the Southern Baptist, do not offend the big givers. That was one of my lessons, one of my pastoral lessons. Don't offend the big givers. That's why it's very good. The way we do it, I don't know who gets what and don't care. So even if you're a big giver, I wouldn't know it. So that's good. Not interested. All right, well, that'll be it for today, and we will pick up here on Wednesday. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to fellowship in the things of the truth with other like-minded believers. We pray that you would sanctify this information to our growth and future glory as individuals and as the Church of God. For we ask it in Christ's name. Amen.